for their life. Now, if you ask someone, do you have an estate plan for your life? So most cases, there is the answer is in the negative. So today I'm going to talk about the relevance of having an estate plan in place and why should you think about having one. So roughly, if you look at the so that's basically based on the population of England and Wales, about 65 million. Now, if you look at that, about 67% of the UK population don't have a will. So we're looking at 2/3 of the UK population, or 2 out of 3 people not having a will. So that's basically a huge gap. And why is that, that so many people don't have a will? And is it really, if so many people don't have a will, then is that really a need for a will? And what happens if you don't have a will and if you die without a will? So let's look at the relevance of that. Is that something that's important and why it's important? So let's look at the first subject, which is wills. Right. So why is it necessary to make a will and why you should be thinking of having one in place? So first of all, if you die without having a will in place, then it won't be wrong in saying that the state makes one for you. So the government makes a will for you, and they have a set of rules, which is called the rules of interstitie. So if you've died without a will, then you've called to have died intestate, and the rules of interstitie are applicable to you. Now, the rules of interstitie are quite a complicated set of rules, and it's like a flow chart. So they will look at different scenarios. They will look at the scenario circumstances under which you have died. So they will look at if you were single at the time you died, or if you were married, you got children, you got assets, you got extended family. So based on now, let's assume that most of the people in this presentation, they're married, they got children, and they are homeowners, they got some assets in the background. So in those cases, what happens according to the default rules of the government is that a certain portion of your estate is given to the spouse and the other portion is given to your child. So just to make it precise, the first 150,000 of your estate goes to your spouse, half the rest, and the other half goes to the child or children, and they don't have access to it till they turn 18. Now, your spouse does not have access to the money. It's a common fallacy or a misconception that if you die, your spouse gets everything. So clearly, that's not the case. So a will allows you, first of all, to take back control from the state, and you decide how you want to distribute your estate rather than the state deciding for you. So that's one advantage. So you bypass the default rules of the government by writing a will, and then you can dictate terms on how you want to distribute your estate. So that's one of the things. Secondly, let's say something happens to the whole family, you know, husband, wife, children, you know, worst case scenario, you know, planes disappearing, a lot of things happening in the last few years. So if something happens to the whole family, then according to the default rules of the government, they have a sort of a succession tree. So they have siblings, parents, grandparents, uncle, aunts, nieces, nephews, and it just goes on. Now, a lot of people, as I am aware, first generation immigrants, Indian origin to the UK, most of them have families outside of the UK, back home in India. Now, is the government going to go and find all your family members in India and hand them over the estate? Well, usually that's not how it works. So what they will do is they will give an advertisement in the London Gazette, wait for a certain period of time. If there's no claim available or nobody makes a claim, your family might not even be aware that they need to make a claim, then everything can go to the Crown. So that's the default thing, that if they're not able to find anyone, everything goes to the Crown. So it's always good to write a will, because then you can make provision for those cases as well. You can say that, okay, how is the estate to be distributed? Something happens to one of us, to both of us, or to the whole family, and the will allows you to do that. Okay, moving on. So like I said, a will gives you the opportunity to control your estate in terms of whom you'd like to benefit, as well how and when that benefit is transferred. One of the things I wanted to speak about is, again, the just one point there. According to the default rules of the government, what happens, what's the default stance of the government if something happens to both of you and you got children who are minors or below the age of 18? So if you have any family here, now most of the people, like I know, they don't have any immediate family here in the UK. So they would want the family from India or from outside the UK to get involved in looking after the children. So how likely it is that they can get the custody of the children? So if something happens to you both, then a judge will decide who looks after your children, who gets the custody of your children. Now, your family and friends from India can come and ask for the custody of your children, but the default rules of the government is that for orphan children, there is a foster care system. So the government always tries to take the safe route. So they have a system in place, the foster care, and the foster care assigned the child. So you're, like I said, your family and friends can come and ask for the custody of your children, but it's not guaranteed that they will get the custody. And in most situations, it's very difficult for them to get the custody because first of all, the court doesn't know that that you wanted them to get involved with your children. Secondly, how likely it is the court allowing minor children to go abroad with someone? And then what's the risk with that? Well, if it's not only children getting orphaned from families from India, there's the children getting orphaned from families from different parts of the world, you know, from Syria, from Afghanistan, from Africa, from a lot of different places. They don't want children growing up in the future coming and saying, oh, why did you allow us to go out? We were minors and this happened and that happened, you know. So the government always tries to take the safest approach, and which is the foster care system. It is very easy for you to bypass this by appointing guardians for your children. Once you have appointed guardians, once then you have passed on that parental responsibility to somebody who you have agreed while you had the mental capacity and while you were alive, that these are the right people who can look after my children. As long as you've nominated somebody in the will, they can be anywhere in the world, it doesn't matter. As long as your children don't have any immigration restrictions to go and live with those people, it's absolutely fine for your children to be assigned those guardians. So like you can see, it solves a lot of major issues that could arise if you die without a will. It solves those things. So another reason for making a will is basically, you know, if you already have a will, then if somebody remarries or, you know, change circumstances keep changing, legislation keeps changing, tax laws keep changing. There's always, you know, you make a will today, it might be effective 20 years down the line or 30 years down the line. So it's always good to revisit the planning that you have in place. And that's why a will is something, it's more of a life document. It's something that you have, you need to keep reviewing it at periodic intervals. If a specific direction or gift is not contained within your will, then it is not valid. For example, I have a watch, I have a car, I want to give it to someone. Well, who knows about it? If you don't write it down, if you don't put it down in writing, who knows? I mean, nobody, you know, is able to read minds. So the government only does what they feel, you know, according to the interstitial laws, if you don't have a will. So it's always good to put things down in writing. Now, the things to consider in your wills, executors are people who will do all the paperwork for you on your death, things like closing your bank accounts, informing the government agencies, making sure all your liabilities are paid, all your taxes are paid, valuation of your estate, applying for a grant of probate. Once the grant of probate is obtained, then they can start distributing assets according to your wishes. So these are people who are basically somebody who's responsible, good with paperwork, able to devote that time and put in that effort to do that for you. Usually it's a combination of friends and family. Now, a common question is, can you appoint executors from India? Well, if you don't have anyone here, of course you can appoint executors from India, that's absolutely fine. But then if they are not able to come, they can always give a letter of authority to somebody else to act on their behalf. So that's absolutely fine. Each level you can appoint up to 4 executors, you can have backups to them, so you can customize it the way you want. Trustees basically are the people who will manage any trusts created within your wills. We'll come to that in a second. Guardians, like I mentioned, are the people who will look after your children if something happens to you both. The thing is, with guardians, you can customize. You can say, this is my first preference, this is my second preference, this is my third preference.
Can I answer that phone?
So that will ensure that, you know, that it's always the people you want are in control of your children. And it's important to keep reviewing that appointment during your lifetime as well. So if somebody's circumstances has changed, then you can always update your will and name someone else. Monetary legacies, if you want to give some money to someone, personal possessions, like I said, a watch or something else, an artwork, seed collection. So things like that, if you want to give to someone, you can put that down in the will. Funeral wishes, if you want to be cremated, buried, ashes scattered, so things like that, you can put down. You can be, it's optional, or you can be as specific as you want.
Sid, can you hold on a moment? Your voice was breaking up there. Can you just go back one slide?
Yeah.
And I think I think from there, if you can just repeat that bit as well again. Okay.
Thank you. I've not been reading the chats.
Yeah, no, it's okay. I picked up a couple of people mentioned it as well. So if you can start from there, that'll be great. Thank you.
Okay, that's fine. Right. So I'll just go through this slide again. Now, what are the things you need to consider when you are appointing executors? So executors are the people who will do all the paperwork for you on your death. So I'm still getting some chat. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's still breaking up. I'm not sure. Has everyone got their phones on mute, their microphones on mute in the background? I've checked and it looks like everyone has and there's no interference. So let's try one more time. If not, we may come back to you at the end if we need to.
Okay. Hi, is everyone able to hear me now? Yeah. Okay, great.
Yes, yeah. I think it's good now. Yes.
Okay, fantastic. Okay. So I'll try to speak a bit loud as well. Okay. So in terms of the executors, who are the people who should be appointed as executors in your will? Now, these are the people who will do all the paperwork for you and your death. So when I say paperwork, it's...
Sid, again, it's happening again, Sid. I think what we'll do... Have you got many more slides left, Sid?
Yeah, I have a few slides left, yes.
Okay. Let's... I think maybe try not to talk too loud and bring the volume down a touch, and it might help. Actually, it needs to be a bit of reverb.
Okay, let me try speaking again. Hi, is everyone able to hear me?
I can hear you clearly now. Yes.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay, so let me start speaking now. Okay, so basically, the executors are the people who will do all the from monetary legacy, somebody's saying. Okay, I'll start from there. So monetary legacies are the sums of money you can transfer in your will. So let's say you want to give 5,000 to someone or 10,000 to someone, you can put that down in the will. You can say if you want to link it to inflation. Personal possessions, like I said, and your watch, your car, you can pass it on to anyone in particular you want. Unless it's written down, it's not valid. Funeral wishes, some people, they leave it blank. They leave it for the executives to decide on their behalf. Or you can, I've had funeral wishes pages long. So it's entirely up to you how you want to do it. The residue is whatever is left after paying off the debtors, the creditors.
Sid, I think it's gone again. So what we'll do, hopefully people have had a little introduction there to estate planning from Sid. We'll try and come back to it again a little bit later. Sorry, Sid, hopefully you don't mind.
Yeah, that's fine.
Is there anyone who's got any quick questions they want to push through chat so I can ask Sid, see if he can answer them? Or remember, you can always email through later. I'll repeat the email address. Okay?
Yeah, I can see always Bombiwala has got question.
Please, Ois, please. Let me have your question.
Is it okay if I speak in a mic rather than typing?
Yeah, by all means.
In the first slide, when I joined in, there was a point raised that this will protect any future claims made by brothers and sisters as well, right? So, in case if a father would unjustly, let's say, give all the property to one and give very little, or most of all the property to one child and give very little to another child, even though it is in the will, To my knowledge, the other child can still take the father, or after he passes away, to the other brother, to the court for the injustice that's been done by the father. Is that correct understanding?
Hi, thanks for your question. Are you able to hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yes, we can hear
you. All right, okay. So basically, you're right. Now, there is a Family Inheritance Act, according to which if you are doing the distribution, let's say you're leaving out one child or a spouse, and you, let's say you're giving everything to a charity or giving one child more than the other, then they are within their rights to go and make a claim. So they can always make a claim, but it's at the judge's discretion whether they entertain that claim and to what extent do they accept that claim. Now, let's say we have had wills where children have been excluded, but then there needs to be a non-provision clause in the will, which basically explains that, okay, this person is not going to benefit. And there needs to be exclusion letter and backed by evidence of emails and other evidences where they need to justify why they are taking that action. As long as it's justified, it can still be upheld in the court, and the thing can be revoked. But if there is no reason behind your planning, then it can, the claim will very well be accepted, and the other person will be given the amount of the court things that they do.
Okay, thank you, Sid. Got another quick question, Sid. If you can keep it quick, because we need to obviously move on. We've got somebody asking, they would like to know a little bit more about lasting power attorney. So I guess you were going to come onto that in a later slide, but if you could just give a quick briefing on that.
Yeah, sure. So lasting power of attorney is basically if you lose capacity, there's a financial and property affairs. So that can even start from day one, but it can only be used with each other's consent. So for example, let's say you appointing an attorney who you want to act on your behalf, if you're not able to act for some reason, let's say traveling or you lose cost capacity, then the person can act with any financial institution on your behalf, like banks or mortgage companies.
Sid, we're struggling to hear you again. You're breaking up. So what I'll do, I'm going to stop your session there, if you don't mind. Anyone who wants to ask more questions, apologies for the interference. Obviously, we're having some bugs with the broadband systems as we all work remotely. Please email them through and we'll get those answers out. We are going to share the slides after the event as well. Okay. So now I'd like to move on to Mandeep Singh, Mandeep's financial advisor, WealthMax. So Mandeep, if you can start to share your screen or what you need to show, and if Sid, you can take yours off while I introduce you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Okay, so like I said, Mandeep's a financial advisor at WealthMax Financial Advisors Limited. He's an FCA regulated financial advisor and providing independent advice to clients on various products from pensions, protections, and mortgage products. So obviously Mandeep's gonna discuss that area for you. As before, if you wanna ping for a question, do it on the chat, and or we can ask at the end as well. Hopefully we have a clearer line this time. Mandeep, as soon as you're ready, over to you.
Thank you, Gary. Thanks a lot. Hi, everybody. My name is Mandeep and I'm a financial advisor with WealthMax Financial Advisors. We are authorized and regulated by FCA, and we advise basically on protections, mortgages, pensions, investments, as well as wills and trusts, which Sid has already covered. So today I will just take you through just a quick look into the protection and the pension products, what these products are and how it is beneficial for somebody who is an employee and a self-employed, how it is more tax-efficient way, and what basically covers in this current COVID-19 pandemic and what not actually. So let's go first by protection products. So there are a lot of variety of protection products like life insurance, critical illness, income protection, and a private health cover, which normally people want to know about. A life cover is basically a death benefit. It is like a lump sum payment given to the policyholder upon their death. This cover can be taken from businesses. If somebody is an employee or a director or a self-employed of a limited company, the premium can be claimed as expense, and there is no benefit in kind tax on a life cover taken from the business. So life cover is a pure death benefit. There is no lump sum payment. If the term expires, there is an option if somebody wants to go for a whole of life cover, which is basically covering somebody till they live in this world. Say if you have a, so there is no particular term that the cover is for 5 years, 10 years. It will be infinite till the time they live in this world. Normally people use whole of life cover, which is basically again a death benefit, to do estate plannings, how to mitigate their inheritance tax in future. So that's what they basically use. Next is a critical illness cover. A critical illness cover is basically something which is a lump sum payment if somebody got critically sick. So a critical illness is something which is very critical to life, but not a death. So that is what a critical illness, there is a lot variety of critical illness like deafness, blindness, heart attack, leukemia, cancer, lot of critical illness which are basically a threat to life but doesn't lead to a death is covered through this cover. Again, I'm saying this this will give a lump sum payment on an execution of the claim. We can take this policy from business and the premium can be claimed as an expense. It depends on the tax treatment of the a premium, whether it is treated as a benefit in kind. It depends on individual circumstances. One can also have a income protection, which is the next off product in insurance market. This is basically to cover your income if somebody gets sick or maybe if somebody gets critical illness. So apart from a lump sum, you can take an income protection where an insurance product can cover your 65% of your overall income, annual income for next 12 to 24 months. It also depends that if you want to have a cover up to the age of your retirement as well. What is the question? Why is life cover not a BIK, business in, because life cover is not a benefit in kind? Because when you are a permanent employee, you have something like a lump sum death in service cover. So life cover is treated as a death in service cover. Anything which is which has to be taken for the benefit of the business is not a benefit in kind. What we are doing here is taking a life cover, which is basically giving a lump sum benefit to an employee beneficiary owner rather than directly to employees. So that is why it is not a benefit in cover. Anything which is going directly to the employee or a director of a company, it is basically attracts benefit in kind. Those covers become benefit in kind, though those covers can be taken from business as an expense, but depends on individual tax treatment that they may consider as a benefit in kind. Only the premium amount, not the benefit amount or the claim amount. So critical illness, income protection is basically a living benefit rather than a death benefit where the employee of that particular company enjoys while living over there. So that is why it may become a benefit in kind.
Questions there for you, Mandeep, as you're in that section. We've got one question. How does life insurance mitigate inheritance tax? If you can throw some light on that, please.
So say example, if I have a million quid kind of a estate and I believe that, so there is a tax nil rate ban for husband and wife when the state has been passed on to kids. So kids will utilize their husband and wife nil rate ban, sorry, not parents nil rate ban, which is father and mother, which is 325 each. And so if a million quid of estate is passed on and 650 is a tax-free estate to the kids, 450 is a taxable estate and kids has to pay 40% tax on it. So which may be around 170,000-180,000 pounds. So somebody who wants to look a life cover as to pay the bill for the inheritance for the kids, they can have a whole of life cover for 170,000 pounds as a whole of life. The day they die, they have the kids will get 100 and keep their kids as the beneficiary owners. So the day they die, 170,000 to be paid to the kids to pay off the bill for inheritance, and the kid will inherit the whole estate as it is rather than selling it out just to pay a large bill to HMRC. So that's what life insurance can be utilized to have an inheritance tax. Nowadays, the only option between the difference between a personal life cover and a business life cover, which is taken from the business, can be only taken up to the age of 75, not more, above that. A term plan, I mean to say, rather than whole of life, a term plan from personal account or a personal payment can be taken up to the age of 89. I think 89 is a sufficient age to live in this world. So why 75 years? Because HMRC believes that people tend to retire at the age of 75. They may not be working after the age of 75 of their age. So that is why they restricted the age of taking business expenses from the life cover premium up to the age of 75 only.
Sorry, Mandeep, stop you there. Can you, if anybody asks questions, can you make sure you ask them to everyone, not just to me privately, so Mandeep can see? So I had a follow-up question to that, Mandeep. Still, the kids have to pay, but this is a cash assistance. So that technically it helps with the cash flow, so they don't have to pay the tax man out of the estate.
Sorry?
The question was on the follow-up to whether the life insurance can mitigate inheritance taxes, that the kids still have to pay it, but it gives them a cash flow assistance in doing that without having to sell parts of the estate.
So this normally these policies come with a trust where the benefit goes to a trust and the kids will inherit the benefit from a trust. Any benefit from taking out of from a trust will be a tax-free benefit to them rather than taxable. If there is no trust in place, it will become a benefit to them and they have to pay a personal tax on the benefit they're getting based on their tax circumstances. So that is why we structure a life policy. Underneath there is a trust. As the policy claim trigger, the money goes to the trust. Trustee and the beneficiary remains kids if they are adults. Or if they're not adults, then we need to appoint a professional trustee or family, friends. They can appoint as a trustee. And the duty of trustee is to execute the deed of trust that the beneficiary will get their benefit of the life policy.
Okay. Thank you. I'll let you carry on with the slideshows for now, and then we can come back to some other questions.
There was a last question I was just taking that can we convert a business. So yes, definitely we can convert a business policy to a personal policy before the policy get expires. So say example, if I'm reaching to the end of the policy, I cannot convert my policy at the last stage because the term is going to expire. That is one option. The other option is I cannot convert my policy into a personal policy and extend my term at that moment of time. If you convert your policy also, the term remains 75. The term will not be extended. If you try to extend the term on the personal age front, so your policy will go for further medical underwriting basically, and the premium may go up because when you take in a policy, you may be 35, more young, lesser premium, good health, 75. I don't know what are the circumstances of the health, and based on those circumstances at the age of 75, if you're a policy, you're paying maybe £30, you may be paying £300 a month as a premium. When you convert that policy and into personal, if you convert the policy, premium remains same. But if you extend the term of the policy beyond 75, they will recalculate the whole risk of the policy, and then you get a new premium to be paid at that particular age. That's how that premium thing works. But conversion is all allowed. There is no change of circumstances, terms and conditions, premium, if you keep the term same and just convert from business to personal.
Thank you, Mandeep.
That's right. So apart from income protection, one can have a private health cover. Nowadays, it's very unlikely people are going to access their NHS. And, NHS has a long queue to go for anything, to everything at the moment. One who is a self-employed or a director of a company, or they can have a life this private health cover from the business. Again, it is an allowable expense. It is a benefit in kind. a director can take a life cover for his whole family, including their kids, so they can utilize or use private hospitals through business by taking payments from the business. Actually, again, the premium paid by the business is taken as a benefit in kind or P11D declaration for the employee of the company. They can use all hospitals. There are a couple of policies in the market where they just directly go to private hospitals rather than taking any referrals from any NHS GPs. So you don't need to wait for any queue for NHS for any operation or any cancer treatment or anything which you want. You just go directly and you can get your things done actually over there. So this slide will give you idea that what can be covered from business, what cannot be, what can be claimed as expense, what cannot be. So these are the majority of the cover which we recommend to our clients. Definitely they need to have to protect their liabilities, like mortgage, kids, spouse, as financially dependent on them. And then they can use it for the private healthcare as well. So the next slide is basically on how a pension will be considered as a tax-free allowance for employed or a self-employed. So as a pension can be taken from personal contributions as well as from your company as well. The annual allowance for an individual for pension is £40,000 a year. Companies will save corporation tax by giving pension contributions plus NI insurance as well, because the pension is treated as expense in company's books of accounts, so company doesn't need to pay any NI. It is no tax. There is no tax income tax allowance on any investments. So for a self-employed or a director, a pension allowance is a tax-free allowance because they are taking directly from company and the pension is not treated as income to the employee. So technically, they are not paying any personal any employee NI as well. So simple. If I contribute £10,000 to a pension contribution from my own limited company, company is saving 20% corporation tax. I am saving 32.5% higher dividend tax because that will not breach my or that will not push me towards higher dividend thresholds. On pensions, any investment you do from the pension, UK pension is fully flexible. You can invest anywhere to everywhere. You can do spread betting, you can do stock shares, you can do funds, anything. You can buy commercial properties. Any gains happen from the pension. There is no capital gain on the pension. The pension, the UK state pension retirement age is 67, whereas a personal pension retirement age is 57. At the time of 57, you can start drawing your pension. Before April 2016, there was something called as annuities. Everybody, when they retire at the age of 57, they start taking annuities. Annuities is basically income over life rather than any lump sum, because annuities are not giving better returns for pensioner over a longer term period. And in annuities, if somebody dies, nobody gets the rest of the pot if something is left in the pension. So after April 2016, UK government comes with an option, something called the pension freedom. So pension freedom means at the age of 57, I have an option to draw down 25% of my pension pot as tax-free lump sum, and rest of the 75% I can take as annual pension allowance, which will be treated as per my personal income. I am no more bound to take annuities which are not performing. In between my pension, if anything happens to me, the rest of the pot goes to my beneficiary on a tax-free. So your family can receive the tax-free lump sum upon my death actually. So again, same thing, allowances. That annual allowance for both of self-employed or employed is £40,000. Company save corporation tax as well as higher dividend tax. A permanent employee will save a personal tax on it. A lifetime allowance for the pension is 1 million quid at the moment, which is a lifetime allowance. Employee will save employer's national insurance, and employed will save national insurance for personal purposes. What's the next question? Okay. So corporation, on the corporation tax side, 20% corporation tax relief on the company side. On the personal side, somebody say 40% tax up or to 45% tax. I'll just give you one simple example that how we can differentiate between a pension contribution for self-employed and employed, and then we can wrap up. If I a permanent employee, a lot of people are getting into umbrella companies, IR35 sticks in. So if I become a permanent employee, people always have that, what will I do with my current pension account? So what happened when you become permanent employee? You have, say you are 40% taxpayer, every pound you earn, you pay 40 pence to HMRC as your personal PAY tax. And you will be left over with 60 pence as your take-home income. If you contribute that 60 pence after-tax money to your personal pension account, HMRC will refund the tax 40% they charge into the pension account, make it £1 gross. Similar thing, when you are a self-employed, you don't have a taxable salary per se, because the structure of self-employment is withdraw the minimum taxable PAY salary and rest is all dividend driven. So you are withdrawing 11,600 or £10,000 a year as an annual salary. So whatever, if you contribute anything from that particular income, you won't be getting any tax credit from or tax rebate from the HMRC into your pension. So in self-employed or a director case where company have a limited, where person has a limited company, 100% of the pension contribution comes from the company as an employer's contribution, and there is no employee contribution in the pension. And that is how in self-employment case, company save corporation tax, you will save your dividend tax. So that is, in a way, on the both side, the tax treatment, whether it's employed or self-employed, it's almost the same actually. So that's what overall topic I just covered today. Any
Thank
questions
you, Mandeep.
You can ask?
Yep. Thank you, Mandeep. There was one question from Chetan. I'm not sure if you did cover it and I missed it. Is there a lifetime pension allowance, please?
Yes, there is a 1 million lifetime allowance.
Yep.
And okay. Above anything above that, somebody if breaching the lifetime allowance, that will become taxable.
Okay. Thank you for that. Okay. Is there any other questions quickly for Mandeep before we move on? Okay. So, Mandeep, thank you for that. If you could stop sharing.
Yes.
And there was a question from Iris that came in just at the end there. Mandeep, are you still on? While Sumit gets to share his screen and then I introduce him. Iris asked, can we put pension into commercial property?
Yes. As I said, you can use your pension the way you want. You can put your pension into buying commercial properties, but you can only buy up to the 50% fund value of the property. Say if you have 100,000 worth of pension, you can only invest £50,000 to buy a commercial property. You will definitely get a mortgage on that particular property through your pension contribution as well. Only restriction on the pension is you cannot invest or buy any residential buy-to-let properties.
Okay, thank you, Mandeep.
Thank you.
Like I said, I'll share the email again, where we can, where you can send any other questions or if you need any support, anything. So if we haven't got time, but I want to keep moving us along because obviously we don't want to be taking up whole night for everybody, and you can get back to your families, etc. So next is going to be Samit Agarwal. Samit's going to talk about COVID-19 government grants available for the employed and self-employed individuals. As many of you know, Summit's the founder and managing director of the DNS Accounting Group. He's SEMA qualified, ACMA, ACA India, Chartered Accountant India. He's also passed ACCA in the UK as well. Grown DNS from to a multi-award-winning practice serving over 5,000 clients now across the UK. So I'll pass you all over to Sumit. Please, if you've got any questions via the chat, make sure you do them to everyone so that Sumit might see them or anyone else can see what's being asked as well, not just to me privately. But I will come back to any questions at the end as well. Okay, Sumit, over to you.
Gary, thanks a lot for intro. I'm going to say sorry I'm unable to start my video today, but I'm here for very, very exciting presentation. Now, given the times are very tough, I personally feel tough times, government has responded in a really positive manner for the business, employed, self-employed. And I'm going to talk about the benefits available to the business and how to manage these tough times. So I hope you all can hear me out.
Yes, you're nice and clear.
Okay. Yes. Now, if I go to the next screen, the overview is there are business grants, then there is job retention scheme, there is self-employment income support scheme, and then there are loans. There are two types of loans, business interruption loan scheme and bounce back loan scheme. And I'm going to focus quite a lot on bounce back loan scheme because they're pretty easy to get. So I will start with the business grants and support and deferral of taxes. Now, anyone who is VAT registered, any VAT from 20th March 2020 till 30th June 2020 do not need to be paid. It needs to be paid. I do not need to be paid until 31st March 2021.
Sorry, just to interrupt you there. Can you just make it a full screen so that everybody can see the slideshow clearly?
Okay.
So up the top to the left.
Okay, just a minute. I will up the top to the left.
Left. There's a little image of a slideshow to the right of your save button.
Right of my save button.
In the orange.
Yeah. Your screen is being paused. It says. No, sorry about this. Okay. On the right of my save
button. To the right of that and across again. That's it.
Okay. Sorry about this. Can you see now my screen?
Okay. Yeah, I think that's a little bit better, but it seems to be sharing on the other side. Okay. Let's just carry on.
Sorry about this. So let me see if I can fix. How do I fix? I wish I could have been. So on the VAT side, VAT deferral. Gary, is there any way I can fix? I mean, if people are not.
If you press F5, somebody's advised if you can press F5.
Press F5. Nothing.
Okay. I think it's because you're using off two screens, so it's showing the other screen.
Okay.
So for everyone online, obviously we are going to share this afterwards. So if it is a bit difficult to read certain parts, Sumit will talk through it and we will share this afterwards anyway. Okay.
So basically I'm going to make it easy for the VAT purpose. Any VAT between 20th March and 30th June, you will not need to pay until 31st March. You will pay after 31st March in April 2021. So it is a good cash flow benefit. There is no application. You do not need to inform HMRC. We will suggest cancel your direct debit. Most likely they're not going to collect the payment, but still do cancel your direct debits. And there is no application. It's an auto deferral. Now, income tax deferral. If you are paying any income tax, which is payment on account, balancing charges, if you have any income tax due, you can defer the income taxes. Again, this is an automatic process. It is not a grant, but you have to pay this later. So basically you can defer VAT, you can defer income tax. You're also getting time to pay arrangements. In case you're a limited company, you have to pay corporation tax. You can pay the corporation tax, you can defer. You can also defer previous VAT, if any. You can get the time to pay arrangement. The maximum time to pay arrangements, usually you get anything between 3 to 6 months. In extreme circumstances, you can get up to 12 months. It's again a good cash flow advantage. So those of you who are struggling with the cash flow, government is trying to leave more money in your business. Now, there is also a business grant, those of you who are having serviced office, retail space, or a leased office space, they can apply to their local council for the business grant. So if you are into hospitality, leisure, retail, you can get up to 25K. But if you are like serviced office or no, other than retail, hospitality, and leisure, you can get up to 10K. Now, the grant side of the money is coming very, very fast. Many of our clients have got the grants very quickly. So it is something to be considering. Those of you who have not applied for the grants, they should look out for it. Now, there is an issue over here. Some of you may be in serviced office and you may not have an account number with the council. So you can write a special letter, which we can share with you, to the MPs and to your landlord to organize a account number for you, because a lot of serviced offices, you don't pay service charges and therefore they don't give you the account number. So in this way, you can still get a 10 grand grant as long as you are the tenant and occupying the office space. Gary, if there is any question on anything, I'm unable to see the questions, so I'll be happy to answer.
That's what I'll come in with any questions as they come up.
Okay. Now, apart from business grants, I've spoken about and some of the deferral of the taxes, which gives you cash flow advantage, there's another one which is very important. In order to retain the jobs and having a knee-jerk reaction in the economy to protect jobs, government is doing a job retention scheme. Currently, 6.3 million employees are claiming job retention, 800,000 employers. Basically, furlough is saving the whole economy and it is making the economy churn. Otherwise, it can be complete bottleneck, knee-jerk reaction. So it can be applied, job retention scheme, if you have any employees, if you are a single director, one-man band director, no income, you can apply. If you're a husband-wife company, you can make your wife furlough and make sure that she is not working in the business. If you have employees, you can make them furlough or job, you can use job retention scheme. Furlough is an American name for job retention scheme. This can be, as long as you have PAYE scheme set up on or before 19th March, employees should be set up on the payroll before 19th March, and you can claim up to 80% of the salary or up to 2,500, whichever is lower. So it is a very big benefit. You can keep your employees. You have invested heavily in your employees. It will be a shame if you lose them. So this way you're able to retain the employees, retain the business, and government is paying. So this is going all across Europe. Very generous benefit to protect the jobs. And if to apply this, you can claim either directly, you can use our services. It is very easy to claim through HMRC portal. Again, this is not a grant. This is a taxable income. Just to, on the job retention scheme, it is neither a loan, but it is an income given by the government to you. So it is taxable in your account.
So we had a question. Is grant only available to trading businesses?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Job retention scheme is available to trading businesses. I have to check whether if somebody is employing in investment business, it should be available. But Sid, can you help in?
Yes, Sumit, it is. So any business which is employing people can furlough them and claim the grant. So CGRS doesn't really exclude anyone who's employing people for non-trading purposes. So even investment companies who have engaged staff, they can do that.
Okay. And in regards to the business grant, I think Sid had answered this on the chat, but it was asked if you can apply for it if you work from home. And Sid, you did say on the chat that it's only available for businesses which are occupying a property and hence paying business rates. So with regards to the previous grant that was mentioned. Okay, thank you.
Sorry. Okay, yeah, that's fine. Any other question?
No, if you can carry on for now.
Yeah. Most important, many of our clients, many in this presentation, may be self-employed. Now, self-employed does not mean working through a limited company. They are treated like an employee and shareholder. But self-employed over here means people who are working as a sole trader, not through their limited company. Government is matching. They have come up with a similar scheme, what they are proposed for job retention scheme. They're going to pay direct cash grant of 80% of average monthly trading profit. So in summary, whatever is your trading profit of the business, sole trader business, government is going to give you 80% of that or 2,500 per month, whichever is lower. So in case your trading profit is of a year is like, let's say less than 30K per annum, let's say it is 2 grand a month. So you will get 80% of 2,000, not 2,500. But let's say your trading profit is 50,000 a year. You will 80% makes 4,000, but maximum you can get is 2,500. This grant will be paid as lump sum in one off around mid June. It will be starting in June. You can make the application around June time, but government should be getting in touch with you soon. Application needs to be done by individuals online, DNS group, or your accountants. If you're using some other accountant, cannot submit the application for you. You have to use your own gateway ID. Applications will be starting from 13th May, which is next week, and funds will be released within 6 days of approval. This covers 95% of people who receive the majority of their income from self-employment. It's very important to know majority. So let's say if you're a self-employed and you're earning some income as self-employed, but majority of income from employment or investment income, you may not qualify. So the key is majority of income. So if your total income is X or 100 pound, you should be earning minimum 50 pound from self-employment.
Okay, so I've got a couple of questions that have come through while you were doing that section. One of them was, I don't have contracts at the moment. I'm self-employed without a contract. Oh, sorry, let me roll back up a bit because they came through fast. I've already withdrawn a dividend from my salary for my limited company in the month of April. How would that affect with the job retention scheme?
Job retention scheme do not consider dividend. As long as they are taking the wages and they are out of the work, they can apply for job retention scheme. But if they are in the business, if you're a one-man band contractor and if you're in business, you're billing, you cannot do job retention scheme because COVID has not affected your business.
Okay, so hopefully that clears up that question. The other question was, is the £2,500 after or before tax?
It is gross income. It is before tax.
Okay, so
it will be taxable. 7,500 will be taxable in 2021 tax return next year.
Thank you for confirming that. Another question here. Is there an age limit on the self-employed income support scheme? If someone is retirement age but still self-employed, will they still get it?
Yes.
Yep.
There is no age barrier in this.
Okay. When receiving a grant for job retention scheme, so going back to that one, the job retention scheme, can I withdraw a dividend?
Yes, there is no restriction on withdrawing dividend. This job retention scheme is purely related to your employment. So if you are an employee of your own company, and whatever wages you're paying, you can furlough yourself. And during that time, if you have reserves in the company, you can take the dividends.
Thank you, Sumit. I'll let you carry on now.
Okay. Now, next grant is, there is an eligibility criteria for income self-employment grant. You must have traded in 2018-19, which is up to March 19, you must have traded and have filed tax return before 23rd April 2020. So those of you who have missed the deadline to file the tax return of 2018-19, unfortunately, there is no solution right now. You never know if there are many people who have missed. Government may come out with a solution in future. But right now, you're only eligible if you file the tax return of 2018-19 by 23rd April 2020. You must be trading in 2019-20. So if you file the return of 2018-19, but if you close the business in 2019-20, you're again not going to be eligible. More than 50% income should be from self-employment. I have discussed this in my previous slide. Your annual trading profits should be less than 50 grand. The idea of the government is those who are making 50K, they don't need support from them. And therefore, they're not prepared to give the support. So if you are earning in your self-employment income 50K, more than 50K, then you may not be eligible. Now, the good point over here is the 50K is an average income of last 3 years. Am I right, Sid?
There are two ways of calculating it. Firstly, what HMRC will see is whether your income for 2018 or 19 was £50,000 or less. If that's the case, then it's fine. If it was more than £50,000, then they will take an average of the last 3 years, 2016, 17, 17, 18, and 18, 19. If that comes out to be less than £50,000, then again, you're eligible. But if in both cases, if it's more than £50,000, then you're not.
Excellent. Any questions? Can I move to next slide?
There was one very just a clarification for someone. If you have property income and self-employed income, does the self-employed income need to be more than 50%? I think you said that was the case.
Yes, spot on.
Thank you.
Now, next one is government-backed loan for small business. This is business interruption loan. I will cover this a little bit later on. I will focus on bounce-back loans.
I think it's a comparison.
I think I can see the comparison.
Yes.
So if you see, there are two kind of loans going on. And this loan thing became really muddy. Around a month ago, it came. People become very excited. But nobody was getting loans. So in last 1 week, government has come only this Monday with a scheme called bounce back loans. This is scheme is applicable for any small business. They can borrow up to 50K. And literally, I've seen hundreds of our business of DNS, they are getting loans. Lloyds and HSBC are the quickest bank. The coronavirus business interruption loan is for the businesses who wants to borrow more than 50K. Now, majority of small businesses are trying to borrow 50K. The criteria is that features are bounce back loan. There is no interest for the first 12 months. There's a repayment holiday. And the same for coronavirus business interruption loan. Now, interest rate is 2.5% under bounce back loan. Whereas in business interruption loan, it is up to 5%. 100% government guarantee. Now, this is the beauty of bounce back loan. If you take a loan today and still you're unable to succeed in business and you have to close the business, it do not affect your rating. Government will pay for your loan to the banks. And your personal credit rating and is safe, fully secured. Nobody's going to take your home or any personal assets. So this is one of the most lucrative term you can get from any government. It's literally like government is taking a full gamble on your business success. Now, business interruption loan is guaranteed 80%, and that's why it is very strict. Banks are very strict in giving the money. Both the loans are 6-year term. There are no early repayment fees. So let's say if you take the loan, many businesses are taking loan in the side that, look, we don't know it is negative or not, but we think it will have a very negative impact. And you take the money, there is no negative impact on the business, and you're not able to utilize the money. You take the money, you can repay it after a year. You don't have to pay interest. There is no penalty. So you have literally got nothing to lose. This is the best kind of loan I've ever seen. And government has tried to make it as easy as possible for the small business. Eligibility affected by COVID-19. Now, what is the definition of affected by COVID-19? Is something we can discuss in more detail separately, but purely it is, if your business is affected negatively, you're losing customer, you're losing sale, there are bad debts, you're not getting orders, you're not getting supplies. Even though you have ordered, but you are unable to supply. This means your business is affected by COVID-19. So virtually every small business has been affected. Business should not be an undertaking in difficulty. Now, what is the meaning of business not in difficulty? In a nutshell, you should not be insolvent or your business should not be making losses. Your business should not be running as it will go down even without coronavirus. COVID-19 impact. Again, you can talk to your account manager how best to reflect this. For business interruption loan, it has to be viable, more or less same. The wordings are different, but more or less the meaning is same. It should be viable before COVID-19. Can contractors, property companies apply? Yes. Now for the bounce back loan, they do say the business has to be trading business. So Sid, can you elaborate a bit? Can property companies apply? I know contractors and small businesses can apply, any small business, but can property companies, investment companies apply for bounce back loans?
Yes, Sumit. So I think the property companies can apply for the loan. But the only thing is under the self-declaration form, they specifically ask you that your business should have been affected by coronavirus. So if that's the case and you need the funds for working capital, then yes, the property companies can also apply for the loan. Yeah.
Excellent. The process is you can go to the bank, directly apply. Self-certification, it do not take more than 15 to 20 minutes and no supporting documentation is required. All it asks is your turnover. You can borrow 25% of your turnover or 50,000, whichever is low. So in case your turnover is, let's say 100,000, you can borrow up to 25,000, not 50. It's purely self-certification. So be careful when you're declaring the turnover. Make sure that it is correct turnover. If you're not eligible, please do not apply. Make sure your business is affected and you need to be eligible. If you have any doubt about eligibility, talk to your client manager, talk to your accountant. The beauty of bounce back loan is it does not ask you any supporting documentation. It is purely self-certification. It is the golden days of mortgage. If anybody remembers self-certified mortgages, in the year 2003, 2004, up to 2005, 2006. Those were the golden days of mortgage. Anybody can take a mortgage. So this is literally like mortgage era, that golden era where you can self-certify and get the loan. But be careful.
Now, I have a few questions, Sumit. Let me just go back. Sorry, because there was a few shooting through. Bear with me, everyone. One question. If I take a bounce back loan, can I pay a dividend?
Yes, you can utilize the bounce back loan as long as the company has the reserves. So remember, bounce back loan is a loan, not an income. It does not create extra reserve. So if you have enough reserves in the company, you can surely take. If you do not have reserves in the company, you cannot take the dividends.
Okay, thank you so much.
But you can use the money for paying wages and expenses.
Okay, thank you for that. Can sole traders get a bounce back loan? What's the next question?
Yes, as long as they're in business and they're using a business account.
Thank you.
If they are not using a dedicated business account, I don't think they can apply for bounce back loans. Sid, can you confirm?
Sid, are you coming in there?
Can you hear me?
If a business is sole trader business, does not have a dedicated business account, can they apply for bounce back loans?
I think bounce back loans is specifically for limited companies. And
so their sole traders can apply as well.
Yeah, and registered businesses. Okay, I think we can check that point, or Aman can probably confirm.
But sole trader businesses with a dedicated business account can apply. I thought you may be able to clarify the point that sole traders, if they don't have a dedicated business account, let's say many sole traders trade from their personal accounts, I don't think they're eligible because they don't have a business account to qualify for the bounce back loan.
Okay. I've got Aman. If Aman can come in and clarify that, if not, we will clarify that to everyone afterwards.
Okay.
Yeah, that's true. They need business bank account, and all sole traders, they need a business bank account to be able to apply for bounce back loan.
Okay, thank you, Aman, for confirming that. So everyone knows Aman is specifically working and supporting the rest of the team at DNS with regards to the bounce back loans, hence why I pulled him in to answer that question. Couple more questions that have come through. One eligibility for bounce back loan is the company was not an undertaking in difficulty on the 31st of December 2019. What does that mean? Hello, Sumit.
Yeah.
So the question was, one eligibility of the bounce back loan was the company was not an undertaking in difficulty on the 31st of December. What does this mean? Can you clarify?
It means that company is trading profitably. Company is not going to be a loss-making company. Imagine if there was no coronavirus and your company is still trading in losses and you would eventually going to fall down, then this means your business is already struggling. And they're not trying to help businesses which are already struggling.
Okay. Thank you for that, Sumit. I've had a couple questions that are asking, seems like, for their very specific scenario. So I will share the email again at the end. So I'm only going to try and pick out the generic questions. So somebody's asked specifically, they've started up a startup business. So Pauline, if you can email that through later and we'll get somebody to discuss what's available for you directly. Another question, can contractors through private company apply for bounce back loan even though there is money in the company account?
They can, as long as if they're, for example, if their business is affected in a sense they're not losing they're not getting contracts, they're out of contract, or their potential opportunity is reducing, or their rates have gone down. So but as long as they have affected, they've been affected. Now government is not very categorically explained in detail that whether it has been affected badly, less badly. So as long as it has been affected. Aman, am I right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, yes. It's about the equity position they have in the company that should be more than the accumulated losses. If company is making profit and there's no significant directors loan, then business should be fine.
Okay. Thank you, Aman. I want to move us on. So I'm going to take one more question before Sumit goes on to the next section. Is can I apply for a grant as a new startup business? And with that, if it's a new startup business, can I apply based on my projections for the coming year in the business?
Yes, as long as the business is started before 1st of March 2020. Am I right, Aman?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, thank you. Can we move on to the next slide now, Sumit, because we're now running out of time.
For bounce back loan, a business should have some turnover in 2019. Okay. So if they don't have any turnover in 2019, so 25% of the turnover that we business is going to calculate, that turnover is for calendar year 2019, from 1st January 2019 to 31st of 2019, not their financial year. So that's a critical point as well.
Now, HMRC inquiries if false claims. So you need to be very careful about false loans, anything false about difficulty or revenue or other eligibility criteria. You can seek professional help with the application. Now, coronavirus business interruption loan, which is BIL, it is a difficult loan, like a normal loan. So you need a full presentation, you need a cash flow forecast. So in the business interruption loan, CIBILS, it is a very tough task. The success rate is less than 3%. Now, bounce back loans, how much can I borrow? Up to 50K, maximum 25% of turnover. We have already described repayment holiday features, 2.5% repayment. Eligibility affected by COVID-19, business should not be an undertaking difficulty. Can contractors apply? Yes, we have already discussed. It looks like some sort of duplication. Things risk to keep in mind, we have already done this. So we've covered this towards the end. There is a little bit duplication looks like, or simplicity.
Okay.
So anybody have any other question? I mean, bounce back loan is the most generous benefit any business can get from government.
Yeah. There was a question.
Sorry, Simon, just to clarify there. So in order to apply for the bounce back, you need to have a limited company or you should be running an LLP. So
you can be sole trader partner. As long as sole trader is in with a dedicated business account, they can also apply.
Yeah, Aman's already confirmed that. Yeah,
I think we need to actually. I think we need to confirm that. CIBILS, it's very clear. For CIBILS, they need sole traders can apply with a business bank account. For bounce back, it seems like they're not eligible. We need to check on that.
Okay.
You can check, but I thought I have checked that. As long as it is a sole trader business with a dedicated business account.
Yeah.
But we can clarify. If there is any sole trader, we can clarify.
Okay. Thank you for that. We will clarify that for everyone. Bounce back is just, for those who are not aware, bounce back was released after the coronavirus business interruption loan. So we're still learning the full detail behind it, but that we'll get a clarification on that. Someone did ask, can you use a bounce back loan for corporation tax? Aman's answered that on the chat as yes. So as that brings us to the end, if there's any other questions on COVID-19 support for Sumit and the team, please can you ask now, put a hands up or throw something through in the chat. If not, you can email them over. No? Okay, thank you everyone. Thank you to all our guest speakers. Sid at the beginning, unfortunately, obviously we had those bugs, so he wasn't able to finish his presentation, but by all means, if anybody wants to know any more about the wills and estate planning, send us an email. We will put you in touch with Sid and he can discuss your personal circumstances with you. Thank you again, Mandeep, talking about pensions insurance as well. Thank you, Sumit, talking about the COVID-19 support. There's an awful lot of support out there for businesses, self-employed. This government's done a great job in supporting them so far. We see what the next few months hold up for us. So please go back to your account managers. I'm going to share the email again, which you can all see. So please email through tax@dnsaccountancy.co.uk that will be picked up and will be sent to the appropriate person, be it within DNS or be it Mandeep or Sid at WealthMax. So thank you everyone for attending. We've had a very good turnout considering it's in the evening as well. So fantastic. We appreciate your time listening to us. And bye-bye now. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.